Let's talk about Iran in war, anti-war, con job, in effect, in podcast 891, the Bob Davis Podcasts. Now, I suggested a long time ago that people needed to think about what they thought the foreign policy of the United States should be and why. And the reason I said that, this is back before the election of 2016, was because I had gone out speaking and continually encountered people that had very, if really had a childlike perception of U.S. foreign policy and history, and it upset me. And so I said, this is what people need to be thinking about. And this last week's experience with Iran is a great example of why, because all people want to do is talk about tweets and outrage and so forth. So for the purposes of this podcast, I have to issue a disclaimer, which is I'm not going to go into long explanations of geopolitics as it pertains to the United States and Israel and Saudi Arabia and Afghanistan and Iran and Iraq and so forth. I will not review military capabilities if the listener or subscriber isn't informed on these things, then you're going to have to turn off social media and Fox News or Rachel Maddow and actually read a book about the region or regions and start doing some research, because expecting people in the media to do your homework for you is just too much. Also, I don't like to do long podcasts, so I'm not going to do a history of Iran. I mean, that's really the subject of an additional podcast. We are in a serious situation in the region, in Southwest Asia, and in particular right now with Iran. And my analysis tells me that this could probably go either way. And so it deserves to be debated and discussed with a little bit more than memes. Well, you guys have heard me talk about ReliaFund a lot on the Bob Davis Podcasts. I asked ReliaFund, which is a great payment processor, to allow me to have a method for clients to pay me with electronic checks. And they put that together for me. There's a ReliaFund button on the website at thebobdavispodcast.com. So this is what they do. They integrate their systems with your systems flawlessly, and they can custom design what they do. A lot of payment processors are just straight up, here's our interface. This is what we do. Here's the thing that goes on your phone, blah, 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 blah. There's a lot more to payment processing than that. And ReliaFund is a payment processor that has been providing integrated solutions to get payments cleared for more than two decades. This is what I'm talking about. So they were there at the beginning of the payment processing revolution. So if you are working on an e-commerce site, if you're changing your back office systems, ReliaFund is a great payment processor to talk to. No long-term contracts. They're secure and technology focused. 866-243-5040. You'll talk to Greg Lowry or Kevin Hill if you can ask for them. That's great. Or you can check them out online at ReliaFund.com. R-E-L-I-A-F-U-N-D, ReliaFund.com. We're still up on the air in foreign trade, and a lot of companies are bringing some of their production back to the U.S. If this is you and you're considering American manufacturing, don't forget DepoStar, American Design, Engineering, and Manufacturing. Visit their website at DepoStar.com. That's D-E-P-O-T-S-T-A-R, DepoStar.com. Well, it starts with a news item. The United States killed an Iranian general, Qassem Soleimani, the commander of what is called the Quds Force, and described as one of the most powerful people in Iran's Islamic Republic. They killed him with a missile or series of missiles fired from a drone aircraft. The general had just gotten off his plane at Baghdad Airport, was in an SUV. Not only was General Soleimani killed, so were several other high-ranking Iranian military personnel. And that's important, as you'll see later in the podcast. What is the Quds Force? Q-U-D-S. This is the Revolutionary Council and Supreme Leader of Iran's basically Praetorian Guard. They are specially trained under the direct command of the Supreme Leader. Quds includes supposedly about 100,000 non-Iranian civilian fighters, mostly in Lebanon and Afghanistan and Iraq and other places, I would assume organized into groups that have names, right? So reports say that this general was an asymmetric warfare specialist. That is, basically, we would describe it as terrorism. They would describe it as asymmetric warfare. He is reported to have been the architect of various attacks, including IEDs and sniper attacks by non-Iranian Quds guerrillas. That's also important, and it's an important distinction for later in the podcast. Both Presidents Bush and Obama monitored the Iranian Quds Forces commander, but demurred when they had the opportunity to kill him. They basically monitored him, looked at who he talked to, and hopefully what could be determined about what was said, and so forth. So it's important to just point out in terms of the context what preceded this strike. Well, months of rocket attacks on U.S. bases in Iraq, the December 27th, 2019, death of an American contractor, protesters in Iraq allegedly controlled by the Quds commander breaching the Green Line, the U.S. Embassy compound in Baghdad. The Pentagon has also said that Soleimani was orchestrating additional and imminent attacks in Iraq. Now, that's what they say, and that may be the reality. But again, that's another thing to remember because that's a source of disagreement and confusion right now. Unlike his predecessors, when President Trump had the opportunity to strike Soleimani, he did so. The general also, it's reported, seemed to think that he could operate with some level of impunity. There's a great story about a U.S. Defense Department official who went over to Afghanistan or Iraq. I don't remember the specifics, which is supposed to be an area that we control, and he had to park next to Soleimani's plane. Apparently, the general was also overconfident when it came to falling victim potentially to a U.S. Special Forces attack or a drone strike because he had gone so long without having to worry about that. Now we have the supreme leader in Iran weeping. We have millions, really an impressive display, millions in Tehran and across the country mourning this general. Was he a good guy? That's an interesting question. So Soleimani commanded paramilitaries, militias, and terrorist groups across the Middle East. His aim was furthering Iranian interests by undermining U.S. interests. The Pentagon has linked him to the introduction into Iraq of sophisticated roadside bombs that killed hundreds of U.S. troops and wounded thousands more during the peak of the fighting in Iraq in the mid-2000s. And again, he is reported to have been planning additional orchestrated attacks. I list those things softly because they are also going to be contended. The White House did not consult Congress before the strike. There's, as far as I know, there's no real rule that says the White House has to consult Congress before it does something, before the president orders something. There's a thing called the War Powers Act, and it requires notification that an action has been taken or is imminent to Congress within 48 hours of the order. He complied with that. And again, here is another source of disagreement because he complied with that with a note that lists the reasons, which has been classified, so it can't be released to the public. Now we have memes and demands. We have polls of U.S. military personnel in terms of their support or non-support for the president. And we have people online, social media, on television, and other places who are gleeful that we killed somebody. And also, we have those who are vehemently against any use of force anywhere for any reason. And I say this tongue in cheek, unless somebody says something they don't agree with and then they want to kill somebody. Here's the thing. If you want the life that you're living here in the U.S. or Western Europe, someone, somewhere, sometime is going to have to defend the interests of the United States. And what I'm saying is the United States corporate interests as well. What's important is whether and what force is justified to handle a particular situation and whether our elected leaders are using force in accordance with the United States Constitution and the rule of law. And in the second half of this podcast, we're going to talk about that. Well, with stories like this, I have to print a lot of information, and of course, I use a certain type of cartridge in my laser printer, and if I go to the big box stores, I'm going to pay a fortune for it, and it really pisses me off, and that is why I use Cartridge World in Maple Grove. They can save you up to 30% compared to the big box stores, and their cartridges are guaranteed to perform as good as new. Mine does. They also do free delivery on qualifying orders. Shh, don't tell anybody, but if you call them from anywhere in the United States, they can send you print cartridges. Here's the number, 763-420-6632, 763-420-6632, or click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com that says Cartridge World. First of all, the Middle East, specifically Southwestern Asia, going back centuries, is a region of strategic geography because it connects Europe to Asia. Second, it has a lot of natural gas and petroleum. And in the modern era, this is the most important natural resource in the world. Our challenge is making sure the raw materials are on the world's open markets. In the midst of interreligious and intertribal tensions in the region that are centuries old. Now, people say, well, it's all about the oil. You know, protecting the supply of oil on the world markets is a perfectly respectable foreign policy goal when you consider the fact that the United States sits astride the Western, post-World War II system, whether it's money or foreign policy or anything else in the world. So without fuel, nobody's going anywhere. Aside from that, people should know that Iran is the home of what was once the Persian Empire, the undisputed ruler in that region and in the entire area for centuries before and during the era of the Greeks and Romans. Iran's goal is to become the main power in this region. Iran is not some backward country, therefore. So, moreover, as a main power broker in the region, Iran clearly wants to control the natural resources, meaning the oil. So, yes, it is to a certain degree. It's all about oil. Add to this the fact that Russia and China practice foreign policies of opportunity. So, these two superpowers will take whatever advantage that comes up that makes sense. They might not initiate an action, they might not start a war, but they will take advantage of what happens if a war starts. And I think that's important to point out. So, what's Iran doing? Iran's nuclear ambitions are essentially rooted in this desire to be a hegemon or a power broker or in charge of everything in the region. And a nuclear capability makes this ambition a reality. So, from Presidents H.W. Bush, Clinton, G.W. Bush, Obama, the U.S., Russia, and Europe have sought to contain Iran's nuclear ambitions with economic sanctions. This eventually resulted in a letter of agreement with the Iranians, which suspended Iran's nuclear program, which by all accounts, Iran was abiding by. President Trump campaigned on tearing up the deal. He said it was a bad deal. And indeed, when he became president, basically he tore it up. And he did this just recently and, of course, added more sanctions, which have contributed to tensions in Iran. And they were reacting to that. And I guess I also have to point out that it's important, and I wasn't going to do it in this podcast, but I got a little time. He didn't like the letter of agreement with Iran. He said it wasn't an actual treaty that had been approved by the U.S. Senate, and we shouldn't be abiding by it, and it's wrong, and it's a bad deal. Remember? Then he turns around and he signs exactly the same kind of deal with North Korea. So it was a letter of agreement that he waved around and said, this is what we've accomplished. We've come to a deal. But we didn't solemnify that. We didn't get that approved by the only part of the government which actually approves these things, which is the U.S. Senate. So there's no treaty with North Korea, and certainly there was no treaty with Iran, but they were abiding by it, which could have eventually led to some kind of a treaty or not. I don't know. But I'm just saying people need to understand the Trump is very hard to pin down because this is what he does. He does one thing over here and another thing over here, and sometimes it's the same thing, and he says it isn't, and so these kinds of things get confusing. And then there's this whole thing about how the United States is fighting for freedom. And this is why I made the distinctions about our strategic goals in the region being about resources, because they are. And I suppose if the idea is to promote democratic governments and free trade, you can make the argument that this is what we are for. We're trying to bring the people we're working with in the region to this idea of democratic government. The problem is that is not what we have been doing. Saudi Arabia is one of the most oppressive regimes in the world. Iraq is not a stable democracy despite trillions of dollars and thousands of lives given there by the United States since, what, 2003 or 4? We invaded Iraq, I hate to say this to some people, on false pretenses. I believed what they were saying, but it turns out to be wrong. If they had said we're going to invade Iraq to destabilize the region and remake it in what we want it to be, well, then that would have been fair. But we didn't achieve that either. So when you add it all up, What we're trying to do is stabilize or destabilize the region to do what? To protect Saudi oil and the Emirates and Oman and so forth on international markets. And then there are other countries and interests in the region as well that we're working to, quote unquote, to protect. One of them is Israel and Egypt and the Jordanians and on and on and on. The fact is, unfortunately, that there are other countries and interests and powers in the region that don't agree with what we're doing, and they don't like us being there. One of them in particular is Iran, but I would also say that being countries which practice a foreign policy of opportunity, both Russia and China would be very happy to be able to have input in the region from an ally like Iran. So this is the problem that we're dealing with. Ultimately, some people don't like to hear it, but a country's foreign policy is conducted with the goal of furthering national aims, including Iran's. And it's fine that that's their foreign policy. We like to think of our foreign policy here in the United States as devoted exclusively to freedom and, I suppose, to a lesser extent, depending on where you come down on farm and, you know, jobs going to China and so forth, free trade. But that's just not the case. We practice a foreign policy which basically furthers our interests for the most part. We have a long history of trying to further these higher goals. But depending on who's president, we slip up and down that scale depending on the situation. And this is where we get into problems, and not just in the Middle East. Now we have celebrations of the use of violence and the hero worship that comes with it for the United States president because we killed a guy that we didn't like. And in reality, there are a lot of gray lines here to consider. First of all, General Soleimani was on official business, but he did command a force of both Iranian military and non-military and non-Iranian personnel. And one could argue that Iran is a state sponsor of terrorism. I don't know if we've actually designated them as a state sponsor of terrorism, but then that would give a president a little bit more leeway when it comes to eliminating certain people. On the other hand, at least three executive orders dating back to the 1970s make assassinating officials of other governments illegal. So the bottom line is war with Iran would make Iraq look like child's play. So for your brother-in-law or your friend who is posting the memes about we're going to kick their ass, blah, 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 you know, without much preparation for a combined arms war in Iran or the region, I think we've learned with Iraq that it would be enormously expensive. Yes, we defeated the Iraqi army pretty handily, but that was that cost some lives, but it was the occupation that really cost the lives. Now, keep in mind that we would be adding to a $1 trillion budget deficit and a $23 trillion public debt. So where's the money going to come to pay for this? Now, what you think is going to happen in a war isn't what happens. If you study military history, you know it's not really all about the rifles carried by the soldiers or the capability of each country's warplanes. It's really fun to look at the CIA World Factbook and the military stuff and figure out what kind of planes they have and pretend that it's a board game, but it's not a board game. And the sophisticated board games also show that you never know what's going to happen in one of these conflicts. War takes unpredictable turns. A good example is we defeated the Iraqi army. We got rid of Saddam Hussein, and that's when the trouble started for the United States. And I am not going to tell anybody who's listening to this podcast what you should advocate for, because that's all these people in the media do. I know that I'm sure, and I don't listen to them, so I don't know, but I'm sure that Sean Hannity's on there, you know, haranguing people about what a great President Trump is, and I'm sure Rachel Maddow is demanding that he be removed from office because of this, that, and the other thing. And it's hard to figure out what the right thing to do is with all of that. But I will say this. So I'll say a few things that I think hopefully will help people think about it. First of all, this is why you have a professional military, diplomatic, and intelligence community, and why sometimes you should listen to them. On the other hand, this is also why sometimes unorthodox leaders are elected to the presidency and then they shake up the status quo. Sometimes they shake it up on one side or the other. You know, John F. Kennedy learned not to trust the CIA in relation to Cuba. He had various reasons for not wanting to do anything about the you know, the Bay of Pigs thing, and he was really pissed at the CIA over that. So you have now Trump pissed at the CIA for completely different reasons. So a little of this push and pull between the executive and the so-called deep state is a good thing, but most of the people in the so-called deep state, which, by the way, the United States really doesn't have a deep state. That is a term that applied to another country and another country's intelligence community, not to the United States. We have bureaucrats who serve various presidents of different political parties, and I think most of them are probably patriots and they're trying to do a good job. It doesn't hurt to have presidents shake things up, because you know what rolls downhill, and you know, even if you don't like Trump, a little bit of concern or wariness when it comes to the advice that he's getting or what they're trying to do to serve their own interests is worthy. However, too much without a plan is also dangerous, and I think that's an important thing to point out. It's also fair to say carefully applied violence has a tendency to knock the target back on their heels, at least in the short term. This has been the experience in the Middle East and in Southwest Asia. And by the way, this isn't the first time in the modern era, meaning after the 1970s, the United States has attacked a foreign leader. In this strike, we killed top guys. Now, observers can draw a lesson from this attack. In other words, anybody who's looking could think to themselves, gee whiz, nobody is safe. And that goes for Kim Jong-un. So there might be knock-on positive effects from this, but there could also be knock-on negative effects. And that's the problem with carrying out violent attacks without really having a cohesive foreign policy to back it up. And this is where we get into this presidency. And the second point here, which is apparently we have a president with the will to actually carry out an attack if he decides it's necessary. And then third, the truth is, and this is something that's going to have to be determined, that the president may have violated three executive orders preventing the assassination of officials of sovereign governments. Again, the sovereign issue here comes into play because it's a gray area, because is it state-sponsored terrorism? Was he acting in the interests of his country as a, you know, as a foreign leader, or was he acting as a terrorist? And this is where it's a gray area. I'm not even going to wade into that mess because it's one for the constitutional lawyers to figure out. But if he didn't rescind those executive orders before he did this, And then I just have to say, as an aside, threatening to blow up cultural, you know, icons in a foreign country, you can say as rhetoric. But we should be – and people are celebrating it. And I would suggest that people actually really think, because do you want your cultural icons destroyed? Because they could do the same thing to us. And this is where I want to get in a little bit to what could happen. For people who are critics of President Trump, the Iranians, despite all the noise, might back off for a while, or it could go the other way. And that is the risk. It's a big risk. And having said that, I would also say, and this is just me personally, and I think this goes back to the beginning of the podcast, I can't figure out what Trump's foreign policy is. So there's no way for any of us to say, well, he's on track or he isn't on track, because everything is a one-off. So yeah, it's politically celebrated by people who support him. He showed them that's what we need to do. Are they going to be the same doing or saying the same thing when they fly a plane into the White House, or when they shoot down Air Force One, or when they do something like go into a cultural icon in the United States and kill everybody and, you know, have 2,000 or 3,000 deaths? These are the kinds of things that are possible. I'm not saying they will happen. I'm not saying we shouldn't do anything. I'm not saying any of that. I'm just saying if you're celebrating A, just be prepared for B. And this is where we get into this question of how big a gamble do you want to take? And if you take the gamble, are you ready for, you know, the kind of existential conflict that really puts everybody on the line to the point where we aren't going to argue anymore about whether we're doing the right thing? Then it's kill or be killed. And if you think that that can never happen or will never happen again, well, you should really think about that. And so this is why you have to be very careful and think about what goes on. One could argue, and it was a different time, but right before World War II, you know, Republicans would not – they didn't even think Lend-Lease was going to pass, which was the law that Roosevelt pushed to be able to basically rent equipment to the British so that they could maintain, they could at least, you know, withstand an attack, and also Russia. And people argue that Lend-Lease actually may have actually won the war because it gave them enough equipment to hold on against the German onslaught long enough for other things to happen. But he waited to ask for a declaration of war until Pearl Harbor. And I've often said that after 9/11, what we really needed was a declaration of war. We never got that. We got resolutions to deploy military force. And so we do things that are supposed to be they're supposed to be symbolic actions or contained actions, economic sanctions and things like this. But when you get into this thing where people are doing things for political gain, and I do believe that I think Trump's foreign policy, his economic policy, and the things that he does often are done simply for political gain, and that's where you get into these very dangerous things. This was the whole point of the populism podcast that I did, and I'll put a link up in the podcast. When you're doing things because you want to activate certain political groups that support you, that becomes a very dangerous proposition when it comes to starting a war. And then there's this question of whether he acted constitutionally, and this is what I'm going to close with. If President Trump violated the executive orders of previous presidents without rescinding them first, or violated the War Powers Act, which I don't think he did, but I do think this executive order thing is something that is questionable, I wouldn't be surprised to see an impeachment article being added to the articles that have not been transmitted to the Senate yet that the Senate would accept. And during his impeachment trial, which may or may not happen, regardless of how you and I feel about whether or not he did the right thing, you might see the president removed from office simply on a straight up issue of finding him guilty of violating his own office's executive orders. And you will see Republicans vote for it. And that's really the subject of a different podcast. So this is on the surface. We'll see what happens. It's hard to tell what the result is going to be with this. When you start to go deeper, you start to realize the concerns. Before the next election, people need to think about what our foreign policy should be. Above all, it's probably one of, if not the most important thing, because it involves trade, it involves our commitments to allies, it involves how we protect our interests, and then by extension, we also have to think about what our economic policies are going to be, given the debt and given the public debt, given the deficits and everything else. But people don't do that because they're thinking about memes. And I think it's a very serious situation. I'm going to add this. I wasn't going to, but I have a little time. I think the American political body, and I'm not talking about the government, I think the American people and their approach to politics is sick, I think. And I don't mean sick as in cool. I mean I think we have strayed so far from whatever the intent of the founders was or is. And I think it's reached the point where it's really toxic. It seems like a very dysfunctional family that you just want to get in the car and drive around the neighborhood at Thanksgiving. You don't want to talk to any of them. You don't want to eat with them. It's not a good situation. And this is where, and I think because of this, we have gotten people as leaders who are not up to the challenge. And that includes the president. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcasts on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher.com. Tune in. Of course, iTunes is the place to subscribe, or right off the page at thebobdavispodcasts.com. There's live streaming, and also you can read the blog, which is now becoming quite a thing at thebobdavispodcast.com. Appreciate the likes and shares. I don't really care about comments. What I'm really interested in is if people listen to the podcast and share it with their friends. That means more to me than anything. I also appreciate donations from Mobile Podcast Command, soon to head down to Iowa for the caucuses at thebobdavispodcast.com. Okay, thanks for listening to Podcast 891. Not trying to upset anyone, just trying to give you the contours of this issue. And right now, with a lot of people, it seems black and white, but it's going to get gray real fast. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast, Podcast 891.